Well, we have a great episode today. Carolyn, what do we discuss?
We're discussing the different types of plants that live on our sand dunes. We're talking about the sea turtles that live on our beaches and are nesting right now. And we're also going to talk about the Florida 101 program and some of the other educational opportunities for residents in Flagler.
Awesome. This will be fun.
Welcome to Flagler in Focus, your place to hear stories of people, places, wonders, sights, and flavors of Flagler County, from coast to country and all the marshland in between. I am your host, Karen Callahan, and today I have with me Carolyn Kovach. Did I pronounce that right?
You did.
Okay. Kovach, as in watch, from the UF IFAS Extension, Sea Grant, and everything else in between. But I'm going to let you introduce yourself better. So take it away, Carolyn.
Thank you. Yep. My name is Carolyn Kovach. I am the Florida Sea Grant Extension Agent with the University of Florida IFAS Extension in Flagler and Volusia Counties. So I do understand that's a mouthful. I love your introduction. Yes. with the all of the marshland in between, because I feel like I represent the marshland in between.
Excellent.
Yes. And the coast. So I got a pretty good chunk of that. So yeah, I'm based over at the University of Florida IFAS Extension office in Flagler County, which is located in Bunnell over near the fairgrounds, for those of you guys who have been over there. People tend to know our office by more of agriculture and horticulture. We have our great Master Gardener volunteers who help people out with soil samples and things like that. We also have the 4-H program out there, Family Consumer Sciences, but I think a lot of folks don't realize that there's also marine and coastal science going on. So I am with the Florida Sea Grant program, which is part of the National Sea Grant College program that was established in 1966. And it's actually in all of the different states in the United States that have a coastline, including the Great Lakes. So they're included as well. Hmm. And then here in Florida, but it's run a little bit different in every state. Not every state has county extension agents, but here in Florida we do. So I get to work with the other county extension agents over in our office, and I split my time actually between Flagler and Volusia.
What is an agent? What constitutes an agent?
So we are employees of the University of Florida, but we also are employees of the county. So we work with both. And the extension program is part of the university. Each state has a land grant institution.
Okay.
And this is back from 1962 when they were trying to promote education for farmers and other folks in agriculture and making sure that all the information that people are learning in these universities isn't just staying on the university, that it's getting out to the people who actually need the information.
Yeah.
And again, that's now grown way beyond agriculture. So then Sea Grant was added in and we have all these other components. And so extension agents are people who are taking the information that is coming out of the research of the university and making sure that that actually gets out to the communities where it needs to get. So that's something that's really cool about my job. I've been on the academia side of things too, and we definitely still have one foot in it, but it's not just trying to publish information in scientific journals. It's like, okay, so we are finding out all this important information, but we know that if we actually want things to change, everybody in the state of Florida needs to know this information. And so our job is to take this information, and we get to create and develop courses and give talks to the public and write blogs and create educational materials and think of different ways to be able to educate the public about this information. And then on the flip side, we also have folks that reach out to us and, you know, ask us all different types of questions, and our role is to help them find the answer or connect them with some resources or somebody else who can help them out.
So it's kind of like you guys are the Avengers. Each of you have your own superpower, but you all kind of like congregate together, right?
Yeah, we all have our own little topics.
Right? And then you serve the public. So like you've got like a huge cape with like, you know, sea stuff on it.
Yeah.
Well, you know. So what did we want to talk about this morning?
Well, I wanted to tell you guys a little bit about some of the programs we have coming up and then some of my favorite things over on the coast. I guess if you don't mind, I just wanted to share. So I was telling you guys what we do as a whole, but part of what I get to do with my program is to create programs for the community. So some of the things that I've done here locally, we actually just wrapped up our 4-H Marine Science Camp. So I partner with our 4-H Extension agent. That's our youth component of Extension. Mm-hmm. And we did a 3-day camp focused on marine and coastal ecosystems. So the kids learned to throw cast nets and use a seine net and identify fish, and
we
used a little plankton tow and collected plankton and looked at them underneath the microscope. We also got to actually go out to the Wallaca National Fish Hatchery, which I'd never gotten to visit myself, so that was really cool, over in our neighbor of Putnam. Uh-huh. And then we got to visit the UF Whitney Lab Sea Turtle Hospital. They gave us an amazing tour. So it was really cool for the students to get to learn about different careers as well as the different ecosystems and, you know, learning about them, caring about them, protect them. But I don't only do that for kids. I also do it with adults. So I teach the Florida Master Naturalist Program courses. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different courses out of the Florida Master Naturalist Program, but I teach the Coastal Systems course. I teach that in the spring up here every year. And I also co-teach some of the marine and coastal habitat restoration courses with that. And then the past 2 years, I've also partnered with the GTM NER. Do you guys know what the GTM NER is?
I have no idea.
The Guanatolomato Matanzas National Estuarine Research Reserve, which is why they say the GTM NER. And that is that's an area of protected lands. Mm-hmm. It actually starts up in St. Augustine, but it runs down into Flagler County. And so our Washington Oaks Garden State Park, our Princess Place Preserve, those are part of that National Estuarine Research Reserve, where there's a lot of great research going on.
And estuarine, so we actually, as in rivers, in inland waterways?
So an estuary is where you have two different bodies of water that have different chemical compositions that come together and mix. And usually that is freshwater and saltwater.
So that's the brackish water.
It is, yes. Okay. So brackish water meaning a mix of salty and fresh. Mm-hmm. So it's where we've got water coming in from an inlet, you know, bringing in the salty ocean water, and then the water coming from a river and it's mixing together. So our estuaries are really important ecosystems here. You mentioned like the marshland. Mm-hmm. You know, we have our marshes and our mangroves, and those are the two main types of ecosystems that make up our estuaries. And we're in a really unique place here that mangroves have a certain temperature tolerance, and they do not like being very cold in the winter. And so if there are harsh freezes, then mangroves will die. And so we're right in that temperature threshold for where there is both mangrove and marsh. And over the past several decades, we've been seeing the mangroves move further and further north as we've had fewer and fewer freeze days in this area. So that's actually a lot of the stuff that we talk about in the programs and learning to identify mangroves and talking about things like that. So I did an adult coastal camp. And then
is there a cost to that for
people? So we try to offer things at, reasonable cost. I do a lot of like day programs that are just presentations, and those are, you know, free and open to the public. But usually when we have these multi-day programs, we have some costs. And a lot of it's partly because we, you know, like for that class, we actually partnered with one of the local kayak outfitters and got to go out kayaking with them and stuff. So that was pretty fun.
Oh, really? That sounds fun.
Yeah. If you learn about the marsh, you got to go out and experience it and get like, you know, you learn all the things and then you get to go out and be in it. And then it's really cool because you realize everything you've learned and you realize that you can identify some of the different plants and birds and understand what's going on.
So these people learn from you and they still go in the water.
Yes. No, yeah. I feel like if you know what's out there, then you hopefully have a deeper appreciation for it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times people's fear of things comes from not understanding, which is partly why we're doing our Florida 101 program that we have coming up in September. This is the third year that we'll do this class. And I teach a good chunk of it, but I also pull in the other extension agents because we talk about horticulture, plants, and also natural resources. Because I think a lot of people, they're like, they moved to Florida and maybe don't know some of the creepy crawlies that can find in their backyards. Mm-hmm. Or you go to the beach, and if you haven't been growing up, you know, I grew up going to the beach, so I realize there's certain things I don't really think twice about. But, you know, there's a lot of important things to understand for safety and to be able to enjoy it. And also misconceptions people have of things that you maybe don't need to be as scared of as well as what you're thinking about. But, you know, other things of being aware of understanding riptides and how to do the stingray shuffle and to check the flags at the beach for, you know, what the conditions are. So in our Florida 101 class, we talk a little bit about a lot of things, everything from, you know, what are the different snakes you might encounter and which ones you are totally fine, you really don't need to worry about, and they're great to have around to help clean up other pests and maybe other ones that you need to be more aware of.
All the red touches black and red touches yellow.
And then also, you know, Judy, who's our horticulture agent, she talks about plants because I think a lot of folks move to Florida and they think they're in the tropics. And so you can grow all the tropical plants. But those of you guys who've been in Florida for a little while know we do not grow all of the tropical plants. So understanding, you know, what plants you can grow based on the hardiness zone that we're in and the types of soil that we have, because we have really sandy and depending on how close you are to the coast, the salty soil.
I've been in Florida my whole life, and I did not realize that certain coconut trees weren't even native to Florida I had no idea until this time last year. I think I was talking to our emergency management director, Jonathan Lord, and he told me. I thought it was fake news.
No, nope, anyway. Yep, coconut palms are not. We have our we have our lovely sable palms, so that's that is our native palm. So, well, I just, if anybody's interested in that class, it's happening the Tuesday mornings starting September 9th. So September 9th, 16th, 23rd, and 30th in the morning from 9 to 12, mostly at our extension office, although we're also doing a field trip day out to Princess Place Preserve to get to see some of those things in real life and also learn about, a little bit of history there. So if anybody's interested in that class, please reach out to the UF IFAS extension office. And or if you just, it's on Eventbrite to register. So if you just search on Eventbrite for Florida 101, it will pop up.
Sweet. And we'll share that on our social media as well for people. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And I was going to say, so one of the other things that I talk a lot about in Flagler are dune plants.
Okay.
Because our sand dunes are so important to our beaches, to us as a whole. So I think everybody's seen our dunes and our dune plants when you get out there. The one that everybody – okay, if I say dune plants, is there a dune plant that, like, pops to your mind? Is there one that you know of?
I don't know the names of any of them. I just know they look like grass and weeds.
So do you know the one that has, like, the little oats sticking up on the top? This time of year, they're starting to get a little golden color. There's one called sea oats. Usually if I talk to people about dune plants, sea oats are the ones that they know. This time of year, they have, these beautiful little, like, oat-like-looking seeds on the top. And they have grasses at the bottom and then that part that sticks up. And these are probably our most important dune plants that we have because they have really deep roots. And so those really deep roots are going to help hold the sand in place and help prevent erosion. So the two ways that dune plants help support our dunes is the roots growing down. It's going to help hold that sand in place and make sure it doesn't blow and wash away. Mm-hmm. And then also the growth of the plant above, because when you have sand being blown in the wind, it's just going to keep blowing until it hits something and it falls down. So if you have all these nice plants on your dune, then it'll hit the plant, fall down, and that actually helps the dunes grow in height as well. So we have sea oats. That's the main one that people know. Another one that's now one of my favorites, but I didn't really know about till I started getting into this, is called bitter panicum or panic grass, which is kind of a funny name. But that's probably the second most important dune plant. It also grows quite tall in the leaves branch off.
Oh, that one looks pretty.
Yeah.
It's like a pinkish color.
It's got like a little bit of a different hue to it. So if anybody's listening, you're like, I can't picture what they're talking about. I wrote a blog called 10 Plants to Know in Our Florida Sand Dunes. So if you search for that or go onto the University of Florida IFAS Extension and Flagler County blog site, you'll come across that. And it's got pictures and some information about some of our different dune plants. Let's see. Also, our saw palmetto. So you're talking about the sable palms earlier. The saw palmetto, I think, is like the most Florida plant there is. It literally lives in every single county in the state of Florida. And it can live, on the beach on a sand dune. It lives inland in the forest. It can pretty much live anywhere. So I don't think it gets a lot of love, but the saw palmetto is pretty awesome. And it's one of the biggest plants we have on our sand dunes. So it does a great job of capturing sand and holding it down. And then you guys have probably seen the railroad vine. It's the one that has a beautiful purple flower that is blooming this time of year. And it grows really quickly. So after we have a disturbance, like if we have a storm and it affects our dunes, the railroad vine is usually the first plant that you'll see that starts to grow back down. So we call it a pioneer species because it's one that's starting to grow back down into the beach. I love talking about our dune plants because I have to admit I was not a big plant person until recently and I've been getting more into it. But once you look at what some of the different plants are. And next time you go to the dunes, you really start to appreciate the diversity of the different plants that are there.
Appreciate it from a good distance.
From afar, yes, from one of the walkovers. Thank you.
Yes, from the walkovers.
We want to make sure that we are never walking through the dunes, whether there's a lot of plants growing there or whether there's not much, because we've had quite a few dune restoration, and with the beach nourishment, there was dune restoration as part of that. And we primarily planted sea oats, but also some of that bitter panicum and some of these others mixed in. And when they are first planted, these little baby plants, they're very susceptible to damage if people start walking through them. So it's definitely important, again, whether there's a lot of plants or not, if there is a dune, we want to keep off of it and make sure that we're using the walkovers and staying down on the flat part of the beach, not walking up onto the dunes at all. But you can definitely appreciate them from a lot of our walkovers. And I also have a small citizen science project we started just earlier this year that I have volunteers, I have about 14 volunteers at 7 different sites along the coast. So a good chunk of them are right in Flagler Beach where we did the recent projects, but then there's also a few up at the Northern Palm Coast beaches like Varn Park and River to Sea. Mm-hmm. And I train these folks and they have a couple of different measurements that they take of the scarp. The scarp is like where the sand dune kind of goes out and then drops down. Mm-hmm. So ideally, we'd have a very gentle slope. In some places where you have more erosion, you have a little bit more of a drop off, right? Mm-hmm. But then they're also recording information and taking photos of the plants from certain spots on the walkover. So mm-hmm. we're able to compare those over the months. And it's been really cool to see how much those sea oats have grown.
I can imagine.
We started in February. So, you know, they'd been planted a couple months before, but we started in February and just putting the pictures together from February mm-hmm. to now and seeing the sea oat growth is really cool. So we've been, you know, collecting those data and going to be looking at, you know, what areas are doing really well. Are there others that aren't as well? And what can we learn from that? Because I know that there'll be, you know, this is an issue that we're dealing with in Flagler County is erosion, and plants are one of the most important ways that we can help make sure that our dunes are in place. So we want to learn as much as we can from these projects that are going on. And we share that information with the Flagler County Coastal Engineer. So that's been my pet project this year. Mm-hmm. Still learning a lot, but always want to share with folks to love our dune plants, appreciate them, and obviously give them their space.
Yeah, our natural infrastructure. Yeah. I love it. What type of animals are dunes important to specific animals as like a habitat?
There are some, like I've only ever seen one once, but we do have dune mice. And so that's
now
a really important.
Dune mice.
And also the sea oats. So you're not allowed to collect sea oats from public property, which I think
that
should
is
be
the cutest freaking mouse. You people, you have to Google this. The ears. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I've only gotten to see one once, but it was very cute. And the sea oats also are an important food source for them. And some other small creatures, but I was going to say, kind of indirectly, a species that is affected by our dunes are our sea turtles. Mm-hmm. When sea turtles come up to nest on a beach, they want to make sure that they're going to be high enough that when they lay their nest, it won't get inundated or flooded with water at like the high tides. And so they go up on the beach about as high as they can, usually to the base of the dunes. So if mm-hmm. you have a really good, healthy dune system, then that makes sure it gives them enough elevation and somewhere good that they can lay their eggs. And we've, I think, been having a really good turtle nesting season again this year. I know last year in Flagler we had over 700 nests on our beaches in Flagler.
Wow.
Do you know? This is what I do when I teach too. Yeah. I always like to ask people. I'm like, does anybody know? I don't want to just be talking the whole time. I like to ask people questions. Do you know what our most common species of sea turtle that we get nesting on our beaches in Flagler is?
Okay, well, I want to say loggerhead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, you got it.
And then I want to say, I don't know if it's second is leatherback, but I know the leatherbacks do like Flagler County.
Our second is the green.
Oh, it's the green.
And then the third is our leatherback. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then that's pretty true for throughout the east coast of Florida as well. Mm-hmm. So loggerheads are definitely the most common. So if you see a nest marked off on the beach, if you had to guess, probably a loggerhead.
Yeah.
But we also had a decent number of greens. And greens are one of the turtles that back in the 80s when, you know, there weren't really protections for sea turtles yet and there wasn't much being done, their populations in the whole state of Florida were like in the hundreds or low thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's increased by a factor of 80. So I do, you know, sea turtles definitely still have some issues that they face and mm-hmm. things that we need to still continue to protect them. Unfortunately, plastic pollution is becoming mm-hmm. a really big issue. The number of sea turtles that are being stranded that have plastic in their stomach mm-hmm. and that's probably one of their biggest issues right now. Also, a loss of habitat. So if they no longer have those healthy beach ecosystems to lay their eggs on, that's an issue. But I do have to say we've done a great job of putting protections in place for sea turtles. One of the things that they did back in the 80s was there were a lot of sea turtles that were getting caught in the fishing nets, especially mm-hmm. from the trawlers of the shrimp trawlers, and mm-hmm. they put in turtle excluder devices, which are basically these metal bars that they put at the end of the net so the fish can go – sorry, the shrimp can all flow through. But if a turtle hits it, it actually goes up this little escape hatch.
Oh.
And so they were able to drastically reduce the number of sea turtles that were getting caught and dying.
What are those called?
Turtle excluder devices, or a TED.
fun.
And we also, you know, now there's a lot more education and awareness and also regulations regarding lighting, because I think maybe a lot of folks know when mothers are coming up or also when the baby sea turtles are hatching, they rely on the moonlight and the moonlight reflecting on the water. And that's how the babies know where to go. Mm-hmm. So if instead there's light coming from parking lots and restaurants and things on the other side, then they will start going the wrong direction and end up places that they should not, like our parking lots and our roads. So, you know, we've had a lot of, education as well as regulations that have been put in place so that people know things that they need to do to help protect the sea turtles. And it's made a huge impact, especially on the green sea turtle population, to see that increase that we've had. And then also we have really great volunteers throughout the entire state. There are different teams that are going out and monitoring the nests and the beaches every morning. I don't know if you've ever been on the beach early in the morning and seen folks coming either on foot or on the ATVs, and they mark off all the nests so that way we know where we need to give plenty of space to. You know, don't set up your beach chairs on top of that or right next to it. And they also do a great job of collecting data after the nests have hatched on how many eggs there were and how many maybe eggs didn't hatch. And so there's a really great like we have a lot of data to be able to look at this over time and say, oh, yeah, there has been an increase because there's folks out doing this all the time.
I've never met more passionate volunteers than those in Turtle Patrol on this coast in all the counties. They're passionate and they're there to protect the turtles. And a lot of the volunteers are so sweet. Like we were walking one morning but this was over in Volusia County. We were walking on the beach, and a volunteer had shown us a new hatchling before she released it into the ocean. So
I got really lucky, actually. Last week, I went down to the beach. I got myself up really early and went down for sunrise, and I noticed that they were set up.
Aww.
And I got to go over, and they'll let you observe from you know, from a safe distance. Mm-hmm. And so they were excavating the nest and collecting the data, and then there were a decent number of hatchlings that hadn't made it out. I think especially there, the sand was so soft. So I guess they said that, the nest kind of kept collapsing back in on itself. And so they had quite a few babies that they released at sunrise. And it was beautiful to
get
to see.
I love that they do that too. Yeah. Because, I didn't know that until I started researching that a lot of hatchlings can't emerge, and the fact that we excavate them. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And gives me faith in humanity.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I appreciate what those folks do, because, you know, I think we look at it, we're like, oh, so fun. They get to go see all the baby sea turtles and be on the beach. But they start really early in the morning. And I saw over the weekend, I saw them riding back, and it was 11 a.m. And I'm like, they've been out from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. You guys know how hot it can get this time of year by 11. So I know what they do is both fun and very hard work. So we definitely appreciate the work that they do.
Absolutely.
But I was going to say, for those, if anybody is, you know, going to visit the beach, one thing that I still see when I'm walking on the beach is people that leave big holes. Mm. And it drives me crazy because also, I mean, first of all, nobody wants to fall in a hole, whether you're a turtle or a human, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, also for people's safety, we should make sure if you ever are on the beach and you want to dig a big hole, you know, you're playing around, or even if you have a big sandcastle or something, we always want to make sure that we leave the beach flat and clear. So fill those back in, because we don't want any mama sea turtles or baby sea turtles getting stuck in there, or our friends and family getting stuck in there. And
Carolyn doesn't want to get stuck in a hole.
No. I've seen some impressively large ones. I don't know how people even did it to start with.
Yeah. A lot of free time.
So I'd say that, and also, of course, making sure that we take any trash that we have with us back from the beach. And if you are able to, if you see other, you know, plastic or trash on the beach, just helping pick that up, so that way we have less opportunity for our sea turtles and our birds and any other wildlife to accidentally ingest. Because unfortunately, with the plastic that ends up in our ocean, it's not even that it necessarily looks like food, but also you put anything in the water for a week, algae grows on it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe people have a boat or have a dock piling, anything. And so it starts to get algae and maybe barnacles and things. And then it also smells like food.
Yeah.
Because I think for a while we were like, oh, everything, you know, it looks like food to the turtles. And I'm like, give the turtle some credit. It's not even that it just looks like food. Yeah. It literally smells like food. And that's how they're able to detect a lot of stuff too. So any plastic we can keep out of the environment is great. You know, I say try to remember to use your reusable water bottle. I've got mine next to me here. It comes with me everywhere. And just anything we can try to do to reduce the amount of single-use plastic we're even putting into the system as a whole, it's great.
Okay, Carolyn, well, you gave a lot of great information to our listeners. Is there Is there any way that people can find out more information? How do they contact you? Where can they go?
Yeah, if anybody just wants to reach out to the University of Florida IFAS Extension Flagler County office, you can reach out to our office at 386-437-7464, or also you're welcome to email me. My email is c.kovacs@ufl.edu, and I'm happy to get you on my email list. I send emails out about, you know, once a month just with the different programs that we have coming up. You can always check our County Extension page website, or also we do have a Facebook page for UF IFAS Extension Flagler County that we're always posting. So whether it's my marine science programs or whether it's horticulture, I know Judy's got a muscadine grape program coming up soon, which sounds really cool.
It does.
All kinds of things. And again, our Florida 101 class starts on September 9th. That runs for those 4 Tuesdays. There's a cost of $45 for the program for that 4-week class. And so would love to have you guys join us and learn more about the ecosystems, animals, plants, all of it in Florida. So you can check that out, Florida 101 on Eventbrite.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Carolyn.
Thank you guys for having on me. This was really fun.
Yes, woot. All right, everybody, that's it for Flagler in Focus. Until next time.